It is 4 days to the presidential and parliamentary elections. Good morning. Welcome to NewsDex. We're live on DSTV channel 421, GoTV channel 125, across all our social media handles. We're Joy News on TV. Coming up within the next 60 minutes, Office of the Special Prosecutor commences investigations into alleged vote-buying incident at Ayawaso West Wagon during Monday's special voting exercise as it vows to safeguard the integrity of the December polls. We'll hear from the African Union Anti-Corruption Board this morning on NewsDex. We'll also be live in Boko for an update on security situation there as residents get ready for the polls. My name is Faustina Safo. Take a seat, be my guest. Well, the Office of the Special Prosecutor has commenced investigations into allegations of vote buying incident that happened at Ayawaso West Wagon during the special voting yesterday. Investigators have started questioning journalists and other persons who witnessed MP for Ayawaso West Wagon, Lydia Al-Hassan, sharing packs of food to voters who had lined up to vote. The OSP says it will safeguard the integrity of the 2024 election. We'll be back to do some analysis shortly, but first, here's a report by Kwikwa Asante chronicling the whole incident.
The Ayawaso West Wagon constituency remained one of the key battlegrounds in the Greater Accra region. The NPP had more than 10,000 votes gap in 2016. That was whittled down to a little over 2,000. And that is why both John Dumelo and Lydia Sarah Malhassan, the parliamentary candidates for both the MPP and NDC, have been heavily on these grounds this morning up until now, with the process just about concluding. In fact, just a little over 950 persons are registered as special voters in the Ayawaso West Wagon constituency. And right from morning up until when polls closed, it was largely peaceful and uneventful until midday today, when the Member of Parliament was in the queue sharing some packs to some persons who were lining up to go and vote. And that is when things started degenerating, with John Dumelo really furious and describing the conduct of the Member of Parliament as simply unacceptable.
Why are you sharing food to people in the queue? Why are you doing that? Why? We can't share. We can share. If they want me to share, I also share the same. But let's respect the rules of the Electoral Commission. Don't share anything to the people in the queue who have not voted yet. And you are sharing food, and we don't even know what is in the thing, and you are sharing it to the people who have not voted yet. What kind of stupidity is this? Why do they think we can't do it? We can do the same and even worse. They shouldn't even try us.
I wasn't here. I don't know if you saw me here. I've been here since I came here before 6 a.m. And I left here a few minutes ago. I don't even know what you're talking about. I am yet to find out from them what happened.
John Dumelo, the NDC parliamentary candidate who's been leading the campaign for the party in this constituency, is really confident that given the work he has done, he can snatch what is considered a safe seat for the New Patriotic Party and turn it into green, into an NDC seat.
I meet people, I mean, this is even off campus, but I meet people who confess to me that they come to me and said, look, John, 2020, I didn't vote for you. But 2024, I'm voting for you because I won't change. 2024, I'm voting for you because I've seen how consistent you've been after you lost in Ayawaso West Wagon. And that's the kind of leadership we need. I'm not going around sharing rice and oil and money to people to vote for me. I mean, I don't do that kind of things. What I do is I give you hope. I let you know that when I become Member of Parliament, things will change.
But the Member of Parliament, Lydia Sarah Malhassan, believes that the work the NPP have done in the constituency in terms of education, infrastructure and others will simply hand them this seat.
Except they are happy with the halls that have been renovated for them, the reading rooms that we have supported them, the water that have been provided to them across the across campus, and they have assured me that Saturday they will do the needful. They are thanking us.
The University of Ghana campus remains one of the key battlegrounds. In 2020, while the election was going on, students were not on campus. But this time around, students will be on campus. Friday is a holiday. And that is why the political parties are lining up a series of campaign activities on campus to win more votes. Reporting for Joy News, Kwikwa Asante, Ayawaso West Wagon.
Well, that's a report from my colleague Kwekwa Asante, just highlighting what exactly happened yesterday. You saw on your screens the MP for the area, Lilial Hassan, sharing food to voters who are yet to exercise their franchise. Yet in an interview with Joy News, she denies doing the same. We'll be back to do some analysis, but on the AM show today, the director for communication for Dr. Balmia's campaign team, Dennis Miracles Abuaji, is asking MPP supporters not to engage in any electoral malpractices. Let's listen.
So I really think that, I mean, this our electoral system process is still quite young. We're still perfecting it. And I believe that we should continuously do the advocacy and do the sensitization to reduce some of these things. I mean, if it's wrong or if it's against the law for you to share food, don't share food. If it's against the law for you to share food, don't share food. Mm. If it's against the law for you to share money, don't share money. I don't know about the Ayawaso West Wagon one. I didn't follow it yesterday, so I'm not so sure exactly what happened.
You didn't?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't. So I'm not so sure exactly what happened. Mm. But...
So can I tell you what happened?
Well,
service personnel were in a queue.
I can't speak to
them. And food and drink was distributed to them, including with the Member of Parliament for Ayawaso West.
Because I wasn't there. I haven't spoken to her neither.
Lady Al-Hassan.
I heard what she's also said. Mm. Like I'm saying.
But assuming what I am telling you is true, what is the reaction?
And if it's against the law, then don't do it.
Okay.
I mean, for example, I saw some videos on Sunday of some NDC candidates sharing rice and oil. I think Daily Graphic posted it on their wall, and I was disgusted. I don't think that we should be doing that.
Right.
Especially if it is meant to induce the voter.
Well, the OSPSF noticed that they'll be looking into this situation at Ayawaso West Warren, and people have raised concerns that this is not the first time the OSP has said that they would be investigating allegations of vote buying. It happened with the same thing when the primaries, I recall, for the NPP at Ablikuma Central, where there were allegations of vote buying. Question is, what happened to that investigation? Well, we'll be getting more on that. Let's bring in Edem Senano. He is an anti-corruption campaigner. He's also on the board of the African Union Advisory Board Against Corruption. Thank you for your time here on Newsdex. Now, the OSP has served notice that it would be looking into the allegations of vote buying, especially because of the actions of Lydia Al-Hassan. You saw on camera there, she was distributing food items to individuals who are yet to vote, though she denies on camera that she did the same. Well, what's your thoughts about how things panned out yesterday?
Well, both vote buying and vote selling are crimes under the law.
Mm.
Ideally, the person seen handing out, as well as those who received, should be persons of interest to the security forces. I know that usually in election periods, we have an inter-agency security task force. And I'm wondering whether we didn't have them deployed so that at such incidents, they pick up such persons, do an investigation. And if people need to be processed for court, that must happen. And so once there is footage showing the distribution, both those who were distributing as well as those who received are persons of interest. And I think that beyond what the OSP is saying, I'm wondering whether the Inter-Security Task Force cannot quickly move in to identify such persons and invite them for questioning. The sooner we do that, the better, because then it sets the tone that persons cannot with impunity go around distributing food and receiving same, and assuming that then we are having, you know, a transparent, a fair, and, you know, this thing, elections. So that would be my initial thoughts on what transpired yesterday.
Mm. Now, what would you expect the OSP to do in this situation? They say they're investigating the matter, but then there are concerns that this is not the first time the OSP has come out to say, okay, we'll look into allegations of vote buying in the MPP primaries. Same occurred. They even put out names of individuals after incidents of vote buying came up at Ablikuma Central. Yet, till date, we're yet to get any feedback from the OSP as to the outcome of that investigation. So what then should be their approach this time to restore confidence in the OSP's ability to actually serve justice?
clearly the swiftness with which the agencies respond to these matters is critical at this point, just prior to elections. And so the OSP ought to show over, let's say, the next 48 hours that the footage has been received, is being reviewed, persons identified, persons invited, conclusions drawn, and these are the follow-up actions. There's that need for urgency since we are just, 3-4 days to elections, that we get that robust and swift response, and it is also put within the public, framework so that others can hear. And so any others who are thinking that they can do something similar will be prevented from attempting these kinds of actions.
Now, the other angle to this is the concern about EC officials. We saw in Harry Quarter's constituency that both the NDC and the NPP were giving food to EC officials. Now, we know this is clearly against the instruction received by the EC chair to officials who will be manning various polling stations. What then should be the approach this time to ensure that they are firm on the ground?
I think that, first of all, it is incumbent on the EC if they have staff and these staff cannot move during the period that which elections going on, but we know that they may require some refreshments, that those arrangements should be in place. So first on my mind is, has the EC made the arrangements to ensure that its staff are adequately catered for in terms of food, in terms of water? That would be a starting point. But beyond that, any persons, it doesn't matter which party or which side of the political divide they are on, who are found to be distributing such material, these are criminal offenses under the law. Such persons, it's influencing the neutrality and objectiveness of officers who are supposed to be superintending this process, and that's not allowed. So such persons should be picked up. It doesn't matter which party is involved. And I think that media and civil society ought to be questioning the EC on its actions in this respect, as well as the security forces and the agency's tasks to make sure that we maintain peace and order, law and order during this period.
Thank you, Adam Senanu, an anti-corruption campaigner. Now, away from the special voting, let's take you to Boko for an update on the security situation. As we get ready for the polls, we know that the town has seen some turmoil lately. Let's speak to our correspondent, Albert Sori, joins us live with some updates. And then we'll also be speaking to security consultant, Adeep Sani. He is currently at Boko. We heard from Henry Kwarte, the interior minister, yesterday. He raised some salient points when it comes to Boko and the issues there. He assured that it will not affect the upcoming polls. But what's the actual situation on the ground? Albert Sori joins me live with that. Albert, what's the situation at Boko?
Yeah, so Boko has been very calm. Yesterday, when the special voting took place, to the surprise of many observers, the place was very calm. There weren't any disturbances, despite a few residents reporting that they had heard some gunshots in the atmosphere between dawn and 6 a.m. It didn't affect the turnout for the special voting so much, because at the end of the day, about 77% of the voters turned out to vote. Now, what security agencies have been telling us, particularly the Upper East Regional Police Commander, is that yesterday, looking at how calm the town was in the presence of the special voting, they want to see how they can maintain that for the election proper. And so he's engaging with the political parties, particularly the parliamentary candidates, and also some community leaders as well, so they can dialogue to see how this peaceful nature can be maintained on the election day, so that people can come out in their numbers to cast their vote and return home peacefully without any disturbances. We're told that that meeting is going to take place later today. And so that is what is being done.
Albert, I'm asking, yes, has calm restored in the area though?
Yes, so for the last few weeks, we haven't heard of so much of disturbances. What happened when the conflict resurged again between October and November has sort of calmed down. Of course, because of the volatile nature of Boko, people tend to be cautious about their movement. Some people have moved out of the town altogether. But those people who have stayed behind are still going about their normal duties, except that you get the sense that people are afraid because at any time at the some sort of chemistry. And so because of that, cannot stay that conflict has stopped or the disturbance has stopped.
Albert, I seem to be losing you. If you could just position rightly and then make that point.
Can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Wait, so the last 1 week has been calm, and people feel that looking at how things have been in the past week, the security will be intensified. Obviously, the security personnel are working towards that, but you get the sense that sometimes you hear gunshots from time to time in the atmosphere. The residents will tell you that they have almost become used to that. But these are this is what we have at the moment. And so, moving into the election, the regional police commander, together with all the other security agencies, are trying to see how they can dialogue so that on election day proper, the calm that has returned in the last 1 week or so can be maintained during the election and hopefully after the election as well.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Albert. Sorry, let me bring in Adeep Sani as we broaden the conversation, look at how best we can ensure security during the December polls, especially in hot spots and areas where there has been security concerns. Let's start from Boko, Adeep. That area is one area that we've had conflict for years and decades now. As we head to the polls, there are similar concerns about security in the area. We've heard from the Interior Minister assuring that they will deploy their men to ensure the place is secure. How best do you feel that we can ensure that in hot spots we maintain security ahead of the polls?
I am concerned about Boko. I am very worried about what's going on. And I've always indicated that if care is not taken, people in the area might be disenfranchised. That is why it is critical that the security services, together with other stakeholders, should work collaboratively in addressing the issue in the area. But it is all reliant on the security assessment by the Regional Security Council, which would in turn send their report to the National Security Council for a decision to be made. So if the security situation in the area doesn't improve, then what it means is people might be disenfranchised, and that will present to us a human rights dimension to what is going on. So I think that currently we should take advantage of the lull in the fighting to engage stakeholders on the ground. The thing is, we know the combatants. We know those with the guns. Why don't we engage them through their leadership, tell them to silence the guns? Because the thing is, even if elections is held in Boko and one shot is fired, trust me, it is enough to disincentivize people from coming out to vote in the first place. So for me, there's a lot of work we have to do in that area to ensure that as Ghanaian as they are, they also exercise their right to choose the next leadership for the country.
Another key concern, really, although we've been hearing from the Interior Minister assuring that they'll be deploying security personnel. We know that yesterday's special voting exercise was to a large extent peaceful, but low voter turnout. How do you propose we turn that fortune around?
We need to restore confidence in the process. We need to assure people of their safety. If not, they wouldn't come out to vote, I must say. That means a lot of collaboration has to happen between not just the security services, but opinion leaders and other groups in the area. Once people are assured of safety, I'm sure they would come out and vote. Otherwise, they wouldn't vote. And there are some elements within that area who, unfortunately, are hell-bent on disrupting the process. So based on actionable intelligence, we should be able to fish these people out, preempt what they intend doing, and prevent it from happening in the first place. And that would be through intelligence. Okay, we have intelligence officers on the ground who are doing a great job, but I think they need to do more. It is unfortunate that it's too late to solve the conflict between now and Saturday. We haven't solved it in many years. So at this point in time, what we have to do is to ensure that belligerence is stopped. Then after the elections, hopefully whichever government that would come, whether it's the NDC or the MPP, they should focus on addressing the Boko issue in a much more sustainable manner. I don't think there has been that political will to address the issue, in my opinion. But at this point in time, it is too late to do so until after the election. For now, what we should be fixated on achieving is to ensure that the guns stop.
As we wrap up the conversation, how do you propose we deal with security in areas where the EC have told us are hotspots? For example, in the Greater Accra region, Ododododo is one constituency, and they're scattered across the country. How best do you feel that these areas can be protected to ensure that voters who come to exercise their franchise go back home peacefully?
There are some CSOs that have outlined hotspots. The Peace Council has also done so. I was with a rep of the Peace Council recently, and most of their hotspots is incumbent on the prevailing socioeconomic and political dynamics in the area. For example, a lot of these areas are already bridled with chieftaincy and land disputes, and we have over 350 of such unresolved disputes all across the country. The EC do also have their hotspots. The Ghana Police Service have their hotspots. So if we are able to streamline all of these, identify these hotspots, we should be able to work with gathered intelligence within those areas. Because sometimes, before the violence happens, it is planned. There are meetings held with certain groups, with militants. If we have enough intel on the ground, we should be able to prevent them from visiting mayhem during the election. And I think public education is also key, and people should be made to believe in the system. I am very concerned about the actions of the Electoral Commission in refusing some civil society organizations' accreditation. Okay, because it
they've actually put out a statement. Let me catch you there, Adib. They've actually put out a statement, the Electoral Commission, now serving notice that they, after their engagement with stakeholders, they've actually dropped that stance. So it's now open. You just have to get your accreditation from the media house you work with.
No, I'm not talking about the media houses.
Okay.
CSOs wrote to the Electoral Commission requesting for accreditation.
We seem to be losing Adib. Reposition.
Hello,
yeah, loud and clear now.
Okay, so including my organization, which is the Center for Human Security and Peace Building, and CENCO, the Center for Conflict, led by none other than General Arnold Kwenu, who is the first ECOMOC commanding officer. And these people have been monitoring elections since 2008. 2012, they were there, 2016, 2020, and even the recently held passing laws by election, they were there. So when you do that, in my opinion, it's irresponsible, it is dangerous, and it only appends or validates people's existing suspicions about the Electoral Commission being up to something. So we have appealed, and I'm hoping that the Electoral Commission will rescind their decision, because confidence in the process is key. If people don't believe in the process, trust me, it's a recipe for disaster. And lately, actions of the Jim Mensah-led EC is not helping. It is validating people's existing suspicions. And you know, we are in an era of misinformation and disinformation. So when such information is going around and actions of the EC seems to be in consonance with, you know, what people are thinking, it becomes a recipe for disaster. So confidence in the process, to me, is everything.
Thank you, Adib Sani. He is a security consultant. Now, away from that, but still politics, the NDC presidential candidate, John Dramani Mahama, has listed several key promises to the Muslim community in Ghana, stating that he's committed to improving their welfare and addressing their concerns during an engagement with the municipal and district imams at KNUSC. He promised a permanent Hajj village to enhance the overall Hajj experience. There's more in this report.
The NDC presidential candidate John Mahama laid out his vision for the Muslim community during his interaction with municipal and district imams. He presented a series of key promises aimed at enhancing the welfare of the Muslim community in Ghana and addressing their concerns. John Mahama expressed his commitment to building a permanent Hajj village to improve the Hajj experience, reduce the cost of the pilgrimage. He also promised to add an extra Eid holiday and more.
Afesu yaka se ye the holiday ba kun be ka ho Eid al-Fitr sene be ya ye ni Hajj committee e be hwe ni adwen ho ni ahwe se ni e be ya e be ma Hajj.
We will discuss with the Hajj committee to reduce the cost of Hajj. The Hajj village was relocated to the airport area and they used tent. When we are elected, we will build a permanent one. It will no longer be tents. It will be a proper building. I just heard today that the land where the Hajj village is currently located has been sold by the MPP.
And so now see I'm saying here, baby, Hajj village no one there. MPP are buying a ton of assassin. Bank Juma, you were near a friend of Islamic banking.
We have Islamic banking, and there are specific rules to it. When we come into office, we will amend the banking laws to incorporate Islamic banking fully.
Sir banking, no. And you see a bar. Your best sir, banking and Rano, send a bear Islamic banking and so a baby come, your banking, you know.
John Mahama added that if he had borrowed as much as the current government, he would have transformed Ghana into Dubai.
Oh, shit. Sir, I'm saying what you President Edinunia, Equatana Finance Ministry. You can't be a obedient team. The Finance Minister, so.
He said, for the past 8 years, the president placed his relative at the finance ministry. Everything we said fell on deaf ears. He only knew how to borrow and nothing else. His bank, Data Bank, was the one facilitating the loans. So for every loan he secured, he received a commission. Now he's going to spend it. In just 5 years, he borrowed $11.5 billion.
I said, all cotton and hoe, Eddie Nisika. And so a car wabono, and no now bedire so. 5 years, within 5 years, Obobosia $11.5 billion. Now, may I say,
4 years. I've been saying for years that during my 4 years in government,
all the new infrastructure, new harbors, new airport and everything else was financed by just $3.5 billion in loans. If I had $11.5 billion, Ghana would have been transformed into Dubai.
Ghana better than Dubai.
He says with his extensive political experience, he can confidently state that an NDC victory is on the horizon.
Now me, if we 96, and I'm starting to say, me, I won't think about him, if you say, sir, I feel no, and I'm a member of parliament the first time. Imagine him.
Since 1996, I've been actively involved in politics. That year, I contested for Member of Parliament for the first time. I've run in elections 7 times, and I've developed the ability to sense when victory or defeat is near. Looking at the current situation, I can confidently say that victory is on the horizon.
Now, when you say that, I'm going to say, 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 I'm going to say,
Alhamdulillah, Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen, Alladhi ala fakahar, wa malaka fakadar.
Well, let's shift attention now to the health sector. The Chief Executive Officer of the National Health Insurance Authority, Dr. Da Costa Bwaje, is recommending investment in local research for the manufacturing of dialysis equipment. This has become imperative in retooling dialysis units of major hospitals selected for the full implementation of the free dialysis program. Now, Dr. Bwaje visited students of the Obuasi Secondary Technical School to witness a dialysis machine prototype built by the students. Naya Ojima has more in the following report.
The NHIA has announced 20 health facilities that will provide free dialysis treatment across the country starting this December. The initiative is being rolled out fully after a successful pilot program since June this year. CEO of the NHIA, Dr. Da Costa Bwaje, has identified inadequate dialysis machines among challenges in the implementation of the program.
We received a letter from Konfuanoche that they needed more dialysis machines. We received it from Efia Kwanta. We received it from a police hospital. So what we did was we made an appeal to World Bank to see what we can do. And World Bank said that under our P4R, we can use some of the funds to purchase dialysis machines. So we applied, we went through the process and applied to the Public Procurement Authority.
In a move to deal with the cost involved in securing a dialysis machine, some students of the Obuasi Senior High Technical School have developed a prototype solar-powered dialysis machine. This innovative project was built with locally sourced materials with sensors integrated for the measurement of a patient's vitals. With the energy from solar, the machine is built to operate even in the absence of electricity. Team lead Sewabna Nkansa Echampon believes with the needed investments, the machine can be fully developed for clinical use.
It has not been fully developed, so if they should go under several series of requirements, it can actually be used. So right now, we're proving that it can actually be used if we put in the right resources and materials.
Meanwhile, the CEO of the National Health Insurance Authority is impressed by the initiative advocating funding to improve the prototype.
As a government official, I will definitely send the feedback to government, then we see how best we can support. The fact is, where I lived in the UK, and in the UK, when we see people doing such things, we support. So organizations come in to support. And with digital innovations and the vice presidents obviously focusing on the fourth industrial revolution, then it means that this is the thing that we must be looking at.
The NHIA CEO made a personal donation to the project. For Joy News, Namaya Ojima reporting.
Well, away from that, it is often said that regular exercise is good for the body. However, not many people get to exercise even just a day due to their busy schedules, and I am guilty. But that is not a problem for 89-year-old Samuel Amihia, the octogenarian who defies odds to stay fit every month. There's more in this report by Kenneth Jesse.
Every dawn, a familiar figure moves through the early morning haze near Newtown, a suburb of Accra. In his usual T-shirt and shorts to match, 89-year-old Samuel Amihia jogs with steady determination. To onlookers, he is an embodiment of vitality and discipline. But for Samuel, this daily ritual is far more than a commitment to fitness. It is his celebration of life itself.
Every time we are, because multimedia for more, some sort of about no talk, patrol, or Twitter, no, a formal, a visa to know whom you know, say, hey, woman, you say, well, no, a Vienna, sir, I'm saying, I say, and to know where then, a real would never be a missa and a walk, I'm saying, or say, next out, over mamma lift. The so bad mamma lift here, yes, we share more caprice. I want a more for car.
Samuel's love affair with exercising began late in his life. For most of his younger years, he was the kind of man who saw exercise as an unnecessary effort. He was content in his routines, never imagining that his body was slowly weakening.
First thing I'm here, I granted I'm in exercise. And they say, now, I'm going to go. And when I say, I'm sorry, now, many feet are crying. Now, when say, I told you, I'm better than you, and I'm body in here. Then I'm starting to say, my exercise. If I'm here 1 week, then I'm going to say, my body in here, we can't see. My body is in here. And I'm casting back, I say, yeah, guys, continue, yeah.
In his 70s, Mr. Amihia took his first jog. It wasn't graceful. He shuffled down the tarred road near his home, with his heart pounding after just a few steps. Neighbors stared, perplexed by the sight of a man his age trying to stay fit. But Samuel pressed on. With time, the fatigue that once plagued him began to fade.
You're also sorry, bare 4:30.
4:30. Now, with that, 9:30. And then, we film beer, maybe beer, 9:30, 4:00. And then, we tell them, we're same for that. By 4:30 in cinema, sorry.
Now, we start to exercise, you live here bare 15 years, you know. What do you say? What problem with you? This is a beer, be man.
Oh. Say, bed down, be a beer, body beer, have it. Say the party of a woman over here, but say, yeah, I'm here, dandy. Say, when you're married, a few of this, and I say,
his body, initially reluctant, began to embrace the routine. Soon, what began as an act of survival became his greatest joy.
It will continue, I say, exercise. You know. Almost a year ago, 15 years ago, it's 365 days, you know, for a year. Every day, you move by say 10 penny be a minute.
Wow.
Every day be a minute.
Samuel's fitness journey has taught him profound lessons about resilience, purpose, and gratitude. Despite his age, he remains remarkably healthy. He intends to continue keeping fit until his last breath.
And that's the inspiration I need to hit the gym coming 2025. Watch us. Well, that's how we will be back with business. Please stay with us.
Hi, good morning. Welcome to the Hello, pal. The IMF is fast done with a third program review. It has also approved the disbursement of $360 million to the country. Here's more in this report.
Ghana secured the approval after the IMF board met to consider the third program review by the IMF staff this morning in Washington, D.C., USA. The board went ahead to approve the staff report as they were quite satisfied with how Ghana has performed under the fund program, especially when it comes to meeting those key targets for the third review. The board also went ahead to approve the disbursement of some $360 million that should hit Bank of Ghana's account before this Friday. The board was also satisfied about progress made when it comes to the economy and measures being implemented by government to improve revenue. The founders of the firm believe that the economy is on that path to full recovery. However, there were still some areas the IMF wanted government to pay attention so that the recovery would not be affected going forward. For some, the news could go a long way to signal that government is on track to firmly stabilize the economy and help strengthen the city's recent recovery, as well as deal with the negative sentiments that recently put some pressure on the local currency.
Now, Elegant Homes and General Construction Limited, one of Ghana's leading real estate developers, has been adjudged the best residential developer, middle-income luxurious category at the 16 Ghana Property Awards for the third consecutive time. Speaking to Joy Business, Executive Director Dorothy Kwashi retweeted the company's commitment to providing housing solutions to potential homeowners. Here's more.
The award recognizes a developer for outstanding achievement in developing high-quality residential properties tailored for the middle-income segment. Executive Director of Elegant Homes and General Construction Limited, Dorothy Kwashi, attributed the company's success to its hardworking staff and was grateful to their clients for the confidence reposed in them.
This award means a lot. It means a lot to us, simply because it kind of reinforces our stand for quality and then our hard work and what we put in the properties that we sell. It also urged us to work very hard, hoping that next year, when we compete in the same category, we will win. This is about the third time. We won in 2022, we won in 2023, and we have won this year. So for 3 years running, Elegant Homes has been adjudged the best residential developer, middle-income luxurious. And I can say that this is as a result of hard work by our team, you can see, and then hard work from our clients who keep on referring clients to us. We really appreciate, and I think it's an honor. We really appreciate. We are very happy.
She further said the company will continue to define real estate to provide safe and affordable housing for Ghanaians and all its customers.
You should only expect the best from us, because once you receive this award as the best residential developer, it means that a name has been established, and therefore you wouldn't want to come down or go down on your quality and standards. All you can do is to get better and improve upon it.
Now, in a significant move to empower young entrepreneurs in Ghana, Development Bank Ghana, DBG, has partnered with Amenfuma Rural Bank PLC as a first rural bank in its network of participating financial institutions. This partnership is projected to disburse 72 million Ghana cedis in the next 3 years through Amenfuma Rural Bank, with 18 million Ghana cedis already successfully disbursed. Deputy Chief Executive of Development Bank Ghana, Michael Mensah-Barn, tells Joy Business the partnership underscores DBG's commitment to bridging the financing gap for young entrepreneurs in underserved communities. Here's more.
Ghana's wholesale financial institution dedicated to economic development, DBG has partnered with Amenfuma Rural Bank into its partner financial institution network. DBG aims to expand its footprint in Ghana's rural community, ensuring that youth entrepreneurs have access to financing required for sustainable growth. Speaking to Joy Business, Deputy Chief Executive Officer of Development Bank Ghana, Michael Mensah-Barn, said, in addition to the 72 million cedis to be disbursed in the next 3 years, DBG will also provide technical assistance to the bank, especially in environmental, social and governance.
One of the things we pride ourselves as DBG is that we know that in terms of being able to be successful when it comes to making an impact, it's not only funding, but actually having a good understanding of what it takes to manage the funds and manage it effectively. So to date, we've provided Amenfuma with capacity building for their management and staff. in terms of credit risk management. And in addition to that as well, we are supporting them to set up an ESG, Environmental and Social Governance Unit. So those are the capacity building we are providing for them.
Having demonstrated consistent leadership in rural banking, Amemfiman Rural Bank will now have access to medium to long-term financing options, empowering it to better serve the growth and expansion needs of its clients. Dr. Alexander Asma is the CEO of Amemfiman Rural Bank.
An opportunity it gives us is that with DBG partnership, we can now focus on long-term loans to customers. So we have customers that we have worked with them for a long time. They have developed projects which are viable and working very well. They require long-term funding, like 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, to be able to grow that project. But because of the nature of our setup and the nature of the source of funds that we have, we are only able to give them very short loans, like up to 24 months thereabouts. And so this is a new opportunity for us to be able to support projects that will be much more impactful, and that will also give the customers a bit more longer time to pay.
The collaboration with Amemfiman aligns with DBG's core focus on empowering local businesses, facilitating job creation, and promoting economic resilience. For Joy Business, Pius Kojobaka.
Now, Sunapiapa Savings and Loans is investing in the promotion of a clean and green sustainable environment in basic schools in the Eastern Region. Under its Jan Binder Awards, three schools in the Nsawam municipality of the region were awarded cash prizes for promoting healthy living. The initiative aims at a collective effort to attain the Sustainable Development Goal 6 by instilling good sanitary practices in young people and children across the country.
The 2024 Jan Binder Awards took place in Eastern Regions in Nsawam Municipality under the organization of Sunapiapa Savings and Loans and Opportunity International Germany. Ignis School emerged as the winner, earning the title of the most clean and green school. Great Foundation Academy and Enokwa Chiwa Preparatory School took the second and third places respectively for their efforts in prioritizing environmental cleanliness and the health of their students. Nsawam Adwojuri Municipal Director of Education, Samuel Into, emphasized the importance of maintaining clean and green environments in schools.
One thing we should know that when we keep the environment being green, we will be tracking erosion. When the last tree dies, the last one will also die. In person, we should always and always have our environment clean. We should always keep our environment full of grass.
The schools are assessed on maintaining clean classrooms with regularly emptied waste bins, decent toilet facilities, clean compounds with hand washing stations and green surroundings. Chief Programs Officer at Sunapiapa, Joyce Owusu-Dabo, encouraged the schools to sustain their efforts, highlighting the urgent need to address climate change through sustainable practices.
They unbind their dedication to uplifting communities and creating opportunities for underserved, particularly the education of people in a clean, green, and sustainable environment, resonates deeply with the work Sunapiapa carries out daily.
It's a way of curbing the menace of the climate change that we're experiencing in recent times.
The three schools were awarded cash prizes with certificates and plaques in recognition of their efforts. Co-director of Ignis School, Patience Amoije, expressed gratitude to Sunapiapa.
Ignis is so excited to be part of this competition and then to win an award. When the kids hear it, now they will understand it better, and it will encourage them to protect the plants that we have grown by watching and then weeding around them.
For Joy News, my name is Manuel Brightquiku.
All right, and that's it for business. It's back to you, Fosty.
Thank you, Dara, for bringing us business. And that's how we wrap up the bulletin. For more news, please log on to myjoyonline.com. My name is Faustina Safum. Good morning.